Aloha from beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii, and welcome to the MDS podcast, the official podcast of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. I'm Mitra Afshari, an associate editor of the podcast series and your host today. And today we have Professor Jill Ostrom from the University of California, San Francisco. She's a world-renowned expert in neuromodulation. She's leading one of the busiest and scientifically robust DBS programs in the U.S. And we just want to thank you so much for being here, Jill, with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. This is such an honor.
Thank you. This is a really special moment for me, actually, because I'm an alumni of the UCSF Movement Disorder Fellowship, and Jill has been one of my mentors. And today, what we're going to discuss with Jill is essentially neuromodulation. Where have we been the last 5 years? Where are we going in the next 5 years? Yesterday, at one of the plenary sessions, we had one of the first lectures on DBS at the Congress. That was with Professor Lynn Amoro. And she kind of gave us a really nice big picture view of the latest evidence for the two more common invasive therapies for Parkinson's disease right now, DBS and focus ultrasound. And then later this week, Elena is actually going to be moderating a session where you'll be taking a deep dive into adaptive DBS with your colleague, Simon Little. And so we really wanted to take this opportunity to bring you on the podcast and hear your wisdom on the state of neuromodulation. So much has changed over the last years. When I was at UCSF back in 2018, I remember you and Phil Starr were still working with the Medtronic PC plus S system, where you had the little cortical strips to study the LFPs. And now we've actually have the closed loop system is built into the leads now. And so you're really able to sense the pathologic oscillations and deliver stimulation at the same time. And so things have come a long way just over the last 5-7 years. Tell us a little bit about what your take is on like the last 5 years in the DBS world.
Thank you for that. Yeah, it's really an honor to be here speaking to you today. And I love seeing you in this role, actually. It's very fun.
Thank you.
You're right. DBS has changed. It continues to evolve. It's been one of the most powerful therapies we have for Parkinson's disease, motor symptoms. And the way we've applied it for the last 20, 25 years has been pretty incredible, just the power that we see that it can offer for treatment. But giving chronic stimulation to the brain isn't exactly in line with kind of we would imagine perhaps the most ideal way to do it, because the brain is an organic electrical organ. And so you would imagine that there would be something more sophisticated that we could do that might even result in better outcomes. And that's what this adaptive deep brain stimulation approach is going off of, the fact that we probably should be adjusting the stimulation in the brain rather than just giving chronic stimulation to perhaps be more specific to an individual's needs, what they're doing, if they're awake, if they're asleep, if they're moving, if they're not, if their medicines are working or if they're not. And we are now at a point where we have systems, like you mentioned, that can sense brain rhythms off of the stimulating electrode and have that information be processed and presented in a way that can be visualized on a tablet that a programmer can look at. And we can use some of that information to then set up algorithms to adjust the stimulation intensity, usually amplitude, depending on what would be most appropriate for the patient. And that's really novel and unique, right? We were doing it in research studies when you were with us in your fellowship, but now it's a commercially available product for some people with certain systems. And we're just getting there with how to apply this and how to figure out who are the best candidates and how to do this in an efficient way. So it's a huge moment, but we still have a lot to unpack and figure out how to use this powerful tool.
It's amazing how far we've come in such a short period of time, but we're just scratching the surface. I think it was only just 2 weeks ago when the ADAPT PD trial manuscript was released, right, in JAMA Neurology. And the ADAPT PD, which is formally, the manuscript is entitled Long-Term Personalized Adaptive DBS in PD, a Non-Randomized Clinical Trial. And so you were part of that trial, as well as several centers across the U.S., Canada, and Europe. And I believe the trial lead was Helen Bronte from Stanford. And we won't get into too much of the nitty-gritty of the trial, but since things are falling into place at the same time of this Congress, could you summarize, Jill, in your own words, just a brief kind of summary of how the ADAPT-PD trial was conducted and ultimately what was the objective of the ADAPT-PD trial?
Sure. Yeah, it's wonderful that this was finally published just a few weeks ago, like you said, and we will try to highlight a little bit about this trial results at our session on Wednesday. And Helen Bronte Stewart did lead this effort, and she's been a real pioneer in this field in terms of adaptive DBS. This trial was designed by Medtronic. It was designed to show that there would be hopefully an equivalency between using this adaptive DBS mode of stimulation compared to continuous DBS. And the trial was successful in showing that it was possible to deliver adaptive DBS and people weren't worse than continuous DBS and that it was safe. So that was the intent of the trial. It wasn't really to prove adaptive DBS is better than continuous DBS, although there was some hints that people preferred being on, many of them preferred to be on continuous DBS at the end of the study, which is interesting. But we learned a lot through the study itself. Patients had to have a robust enough local field potential signal to enroll, which we weren't sure if people would even have enough of a signal to use as a digital biomarker or a physiological biomarker at the time. We had legacy leads in place, not the newer Sensite leads, which are better. You're stimulating through the electrode, which is the same electrode you're also getting the signal off of, and how much interaction might there be from artifacts or cardiac rhythm. So there was a lot we were understanding. And the protocol was amended midway through to include these newer Sensite leads, which we also had directional capabilities. So that was also nice to show that it was also possible to use those types of leads for this mode of stimulation. And I don't know how much you want me to go into this, but there's really two ways that the stimulation could be set up in the adaptive arms. One is called dual threshold. The other one's called single threshold, which
is
confusing.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually, because I was very curious about what that meant.
Yeah, there was really two strategies in terms of how you would adjust the amplitude. And both of these were studied in this trial. And there were reasons behind that, which we could go into. But the dual threshold is really a softer, slower adjustment of the amplitude that occurs over minutes, not so fast, where the single threshold is very fast adjustment, really related to burst activity. And so we don't know yet which one of these modes is going to be more appropriate for an individual patient, but they were both studied and they were both found to be beneficial in terms of improving motor outcomes. So we have them both now available to us commercially. And we're, as a field now, I think, trying to unpack when we would use one or the other or how we would decide. So it's really unclear yet, I think, which one is best for which patient.
And at the end of the study, the patients were asked if they wanted to stay in the continuous DBS mode or if they wanted to choose one of the two adaptive DBS modes. And it seems like most of the patients chose the adaptive mode. Is that correct?
That's true. There were people who couldn't tolerate being in adaptive DBS mode along the way. And so for people who couldn't tolerate one of the two, either dual or single threshold modes, they could opt out of that and continue just with the one mode they could tolerate. So there was a little bit of a selection issue there. But you're right, at the very end of the trial, for people who made it to the end, most definitely patients prefer to remain in the adaptive mode.
And the hypothesis is obviously that in the adaptive mode, there's a little bit more control of fluctuations and there's less chance of stimulation-induced side effects. Is that right? I don't know how much you guys have looked into in detail all of the different side effects, but what was your take on that data?
Yes, I think this trial wasn't designed to really unpack all of those important questions. It was really, I think, to show proof of principle that this was possible and safe.
Gotcha.
But there was, and there will be more analysis coming out of the work that was done now that this primary paper has been published. We did show that patients who had tremor also still benefited, and there was some concern that perhaps tremor, which isn't as related to the local field potential and the beta oscillatory frequency band.
Right.
That it may not be as effective for tremor, but it still seemed to be fine in those tremor dominant patients. They were included.
Super interesting.
And then I guess we've had some experience, and you as a programming DBS patients for your whole career know that there's, in most systems, the availability of patients to increase and decrease their amplitude on their own from their patient programmer. So we've sometimes used adaptive DBS, but through the patient programmer over time for some people who are very sensitive to either dyskinesia or some other problem when their medicines are working or not working. But now that can be taken back and be just automated. There was an improvement in on time in this cohort of patients over continuous DBS, not a huge amount, but a little bit. They were already pretty well managed. Remember, continuous DBS works pretty well.
Yeah.
But I think the more we learn how to use this and we can get better at finding the best settings for someone and the right medications in combination, people should have less fluctuations.
And this morning, Jill, we heard from one of our junior awardees, Dr. Junghwan Shin. He is from Seoul University, and he presented his work on deciphering the specific kind of STN subpopulation of cells that's responsible potentially for the motor benefit with stimulation, and those are the parvalbumin cells. And he even presented that potentially the non-parvalbumin cells could be responsible for some of those unwanted non-motor side effects, such as anxiety. And so after hearing that lecture this morning, and he alluded to this, did this kind of get the wheels turning in your brain as to where we might be going with the next generation of DBS systems? I know, again, we're just scratching the surface of adaptive DBS, but I'm sure, being the expert that you are, you've been thinking about, when you hear these lectures, kind of where things could be headed.
That's a good question. I think we're still not able to identify how to stimulate certain specific neuronal subtypes. His talk was interesting, and that's wonderful. We can now start to tease it apart, but they are somewhat co-localized. And so we may not be able to, with the current methods, have a way to just stimulate those specific neurons. They're probably all around each other.
Right.
But you never know. There might be ways to use different stimulation patterns that might affect certain neuronal subtypes. But this is getting more complex than we can really understand yet. But I know it's amazing. The field is moving so fast. There's so much we've learned about the subanatomy around the STN. And with other connectomics and other visualization packages that are existing too outside of physiology, marrying the two, I think, has an incredible power to even make this more individualized for a certain patient.
Absolutely. When I was at UCSF, I was just so amazed that you used, even though DBS is a therapeutic device, you really are using it to learn more about the brain. And so with that, it's such a pleasure chatting with you, Jill, today, even though it was brief. I'm anxiously awaiting your talk in the next few days, and I'm really proud to say that I'm one of your trainees and I've learned from you. And thank you for taking the time to join us for this podcast today. So big mahalo to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Mitra.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders, and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.